Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guest. I got to tell you something, people. You know, back in the day, before there was all these cable networks, there was like in Philadelphia, we had channel 3, 6, 10, 12, which is PBS, 17, 29, and 48. And if you were lucky enough to be an actor on one of the networks, a lot of people watched your show. Now, if you were on a hit, so many people watched your show. And this is a known fact. When my guest got married, her character in the show Dallas, I read that 66 million people watched. And at that time, there was only 224 million people in America. So that means over 25% watched it. And I can imagine her life must have been crazy. I can imagine people recognized her everywhere. But I'm so glad she came on. And from Dallas, Lucy Ewing herself, Charlene Tilton. How you doing, Charlene?
I'm wonderful, my dear. How are you?
Good, good. You know, I saw those facts. My wife and me were talking about it. And that Who Shot JR was 89 million. But you look at that, I mean, 66 million. Do you ever sit there now and go, oh my God, that's like everybody on your block?
Hate to tell you, I think your numbers are off. I think it was a lot more than that because it was a global phenomenon.
Okay, I
I
meant in
mean,
America.
it may be in America, but I mean, it was globally, yeah. There will never be anything like it because there's more than three networks now, so.
So, we're going to start. How did you get into acting? I know you're from San Diego. What were you a talent and you sing? Were you a talented kid or what was it like your childhood?
Well, I grew up in Los Angeles, and acting was something I remember wanting to do since literally I was 2 years old, since my earliest memories. I loved it. I had a wild imagination and I could pretend and play, and I just loved living in my imagination and creating characters. And I was always putting on shows for people in the neighborhood and things like that. And I was raised in foster homes from the age of 5 years old to 8 years old. And then I got back, reunited back with my mom. But during those years, I really was alone a lot. So I just created characters and stories and things in my head.
So, how do you pursue this career then? You want to do it, you know you want to do it, and you're in the right place, LA, but it's so hard. You know, because when we're little, we want to do something, but we change our ideology, you know. So, when did you really start pursuing it?
From the time I was 8 years old, I would take the RTD bus in Los Angeles and I would go to different parks and recreations and places that they were doing shows. And I went to this theater class that was, they would teach tap dancing and drama on Saturdays. And I said, look, we don't have the money, but I will clean, I'll help you, I'll do anything I can. Just I need to get some free lessons here. Well, I ended up studying with them for several years, the Krasner sisters, Daisy and Lila Krasner, and they never charged me a penny, and they would always buy me lunch, and I worked with them, and I just every chance I could be, any play at school, anything, I would always do it.
Did you feel yourself really getting better when with the classes when you were younger? Did you feel yourself growing as an actor? Because you must recognize that it was, well, first you recognize that you have talent and they must have seen something in you. But did you start really feeling comfortable in your own skin at a young age?
No, I think that's why I became an actor, because I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. I think that I was just wanting to escape my world. My mother was very severely mentally ill, like I said, in and out of foster homes, and getting to and reading. I read so, and I still to this day read like 3 books a week minimum. I read a lot. I love to go to the theater. I just love it. So, yeah. It was my savior, actually. And
See,
I
that's good.
yeah.
It's good. And it's so important. I think, you know, a lot of schools decide to cut the arts. And I think it's such a bad, bad thing because, my brother and sister played instruments. I could not play an instrument, but I ended up getting into comedy. And it would, and a teacher had recognized that I would could write funny, and he said, you could do this eventually. But I think the arts are so important. It seems like for you, I mean, are you really involved with the arts still?
I am. Actually, I live in Nashville and I go to an acting class every week. It is like going to the gym. If you don't go to the gym, then all of a sudden you're asked to bench press, 500 pounds. You're not going to be able to do it. So it's like I go, I'm inspired by the other actors in the class, most of which are younger than I am, and they're talented, and you just get up every week and you're doing it and trying new scenes and working things out, and it's important.
So you're in LA. When did you get your first break on TV?
Well, I was at Hollywood High School and I did a play, and it was called Elizabeth One, and I played like eight different characters in it. One was a mime with no lines, so it was just little. And our drama teacher, our director, Jerry Melton, after the show was talking with somebody, and this woman was saying, "Yeah, but who is that little, that blonde girl, the one that played that Russian Muscovite?" And I said, "That was me." And she said, "You were really good playing all those characters. Are you interested in having an agent?" And I said, "Yes." So I needed to get 8x10s. I did not have the money to get 8x10s. So I took my school picture and had it duplicated. And she sent me out on auditions. And first one was a McDonald's commercial. It was between myself and somebody else. The second one was a movie, Freaky Friday, with Jodie Foster. And I played the original Freaky Friday, and with Jodie Foster, Barbara Harris, and John Astin. And I played Jodie Foster's friend, Bambi. And during the audition, they asked me, "Can you water ski?" Of course, right off the, without missing a beat, I said, "Oh, water ski." I said, "Yeah, I compete. I've won a lot of trophies for water skiing." They said, "Oh, that's great, great." I'd never even seen a water ski before in my life. I've never even touched a water ski. So anyway, I get the part, and part of the part was Jody's character, my character. We're on a water ski team together. And we do a pyramid, and I'm supposed to be the expert water skier on the top of the pyramid. So anyway, but because Jody was a big star, they had given her lessons. So the day we had to film that water skis, there I am in the water skis. I'm next to Jody. She's right next to me. We're holding on to our ropes. And the boat is about to pull us off the dock. We're supposed to. I've never touched a water ski before, never seen a water ski. And I literally had a conversation. I was 15 years old at the time. And I said, "God, if you just let me stand up on these skis, I swear to God, I will never do anything bad in my life, ever." It was like, so action, boom. So the boat takes off. Jody and I both go under. Okay, so take two. I don't know how. I don't know why. I stayed up on those skis. I am telling you, I cannot throw a ball. I can't catch a ball. I can't jump. I can't run. I can't. I am as athletic as this tabletop. I can't do any. I water skied. It really was a miracle. And no one was the wiser.
What was it like being on the set? I mean, it must have been great because you're on this movie set and it's your dream and you're 15. And I love the fact that you said, because they always say, if you can't do it, just say you can. And hopefully for you, it worked out. But what was it like? What was your feeling being on set? Did you feel that you really accomplished something? Because, as you said, you had a hard upbringing and now you're in a movie.
Oh, I was ready. I felt very comfortable. Jodie Foster was a couple years younger than I am. She's so smart, and she had already done Taxi Driver, and I don't believe it was out yet, but she had done Taxi Driver, and she's intelligent. We had to have school on the set. She was studying geometry in French. So, I mean, she's like really smart. And she was so nice. There was a group of us kids. Yeah, it was lovely. It was a wonderful, fun experience. And then from that movie, our somebody from that movie, our script supervisor, recommended me to Gary Marshall when a part came up on Happy Days. And I ended up getting cast on Happy Days. And then I started doing those television shows like Happy Days, Eight Is Enough, and all the shows that James at 15 and those shows that were on at the time.
There was so many. It was such good television back then. When you think about it, I talk about how many people watched you in Dallas, but it was, me and my wife talk about this, you had to watch the show, because if you missed it, you had to wait to the summer. And it wasn't like now. And it's so funny, we get spoiled, because now if you watch a show on a cable now, like on Amazon, and they go, "Oh, we're gonna do it every week," you're like, "Wait, we want to watch it the whole time." But it was such a great time. And it's it's a part of TV history. I mean, what was it like on Happy Days? Because that was, everyone loved Happy Days.
Well, Happy Days. I was a little nervous because, first of all, I had the biggest crush on Henry Winkler. I mean, like the biggest crush in the world, along with everybody else. And so, but when I got to the set, I was underage. And my mom, at that point, I was sleeping on different people's couches and things like that. I hadn't gotten my own apartment yet. And my mom was back in a facility. So I just, nobody checked anything back then. I mean, literally, I was supposed to go back into foster care. I forged my way out of that. I never went back into foster care. I got my own apartment, at 16 years old. But on Happy Days, I lied because I needed a teacher on the set. And I said, "Oh, I'm emancipated." And they said, "Okay, great." So I didn't have any schooling, or so I was a little nervous, but nobody caught me, and there I was, just on the set and having a great time.
See it? No, it's okay. Let's get to Dallas. How did Dallas come around? And I mean, it is amazing. I still think the numbers that show got, it's like everyone watched it. And we'll get to that. But was what was your how did you end up getting the part on Dallas?
There was a magazine back in the day called Dramalog. It's Backstage West now, but it was Dramalog. And I would go, would come out like weekly or every other week, something like that. It was a quarter. If I had a quarter, I would get it. If not, I would just sit and read it at the newsstand. But they would have some casting notices. It was articles about different stars and people, but they would have a few casting notices. And they had the casting notice for Dallas, and it had the list of characters: J.R. Ewing, da, 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 Pamela, blah, 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 Bobby, and it had Lucy Ewing. And the description was a manipulative little sex pot born with a silver spoon. Her parents have been driven off the ranch, but she has everything money can buy, a mischievous little sex pot. I clicked with that character immediately. I knew it, and I said, "This is my part." I just knew. It was Barbara Miller, who was the casting director, one of the most talented casting directors. She ended up casting Friends, I believe, and sadly, she's passed away. But she had put me on Code Red, Eight Is Enough, and some different shows. And she said, my agent called and said, she said, "Nope, Charlene's not right. She's too young. We need somebody with more experience." Nope. So I went in, snuck into Warner Brothers every day for 2 weeks. "Do not try this. This is a long time ago. You will be arrested now." But if a truck was driving on the lot, I would run alongside the truck. I would sneak in and go to her office and say, "Please, please, let me read. Just give me, let me read. Just let me read." So one day, her and her assistant, Irene Mariano, said, "Come back tomorrow at 5." And I said, "Well, can I get a copy of the sides? Can I get a script?" "Nope, just come here. We'll have some sides for you." I said, "Okay." So the next day, my appointment was at 5. I got to the studio at 1. I watched them leave their office, to go to lunch. So I ran into their office, snuck in. I found a copy of the script, stole it, went to my acting coach, Jeff Corey, worked with him. I was scrappy, honey. I was a street kid. I was a latchkey kid. My mom was, it was what I was. So I went, worked with my acting coach, Jeff Corey, and I went in and did that audition. And I had to go afterwards, I had to go to the network, and but I ended up getting the part. But I knew there was more to Lucy from all of her acting out, man, going from man to man, boy to boy, or all the scheming and things. There was something, she was acting out. There was something missing. She didn't have her parents. And to me, there was more than just what was on the page. I just got what made Lucy tick immediately. I just got that vulnerability, that need, that I just knew it.
So you get the part. At the time, I mean, well, it changed your whole life.
Yes.
But it when you find out, I mean, what is your reaction? You know, when you were sleeping on couches and you were jumping, and so all of a sudden you're going to get a paycheck
Yes.
weekly and your own trailer. So, I mean, are you over the moon? How do you stay grounded? Because, you know, you're scrappy, you're a young kid, but that's life-changing. And I don't care who you are, when something is life-changing, it's going to be overwhelming a little bit.
Yeah, I was working on Hollywood Boulevard at a t-shirt shop called Super Shirts, making $2.10 an hour, and I had my own apartment on Hollywood Boulevard. And when I told my friends that I had made in the apartment building, I had a couple girlfriends that I made, and they knew that I was underage and living in my own apartment, but no one, back then no one cared. So they took a piece of aluminum foil and cut it into a star and pasted a big aluminum star on my front door, on my door to the on the door to my apartment. And by the way, the only furniture I had in my apartment was a mattress that somebody had given me. I had two crates that I had found in the alley and two lamps that I bought like at Goodwill. That was my furniture that I had when I got Dallas. That was it. I had no other furniture. And just living on the floor of my apartment. So on Hollywood Boulevard.
Now, was Dallas the first season? How did the first season go in popularity? Because it was a new concept somewhat.
Yeah, it actually was. We did six episodes. It was a mini series. And by the sixth one, we had grown. Now, the reviews were amazing across the board. The reviews were great. And by this, it got picked up. But see, back then they gave things a chance. You know what I mean? So anyway, it got picked up, and it wasn't like the biggest hit right out of the box. It grew, and that's what made it such a solid hit, because it grew by word of mouth, I guess. It grew, it found the audience, or the audience found us. And to this day, they are loyal. They every time any of the cast members, we go out and do an appearance together, they are there. We have a thing that we have done the last 2 years called the South Fork Experience. Linda Gray, Patrick Duffy, myself, Steve Keneally from the original show, we go to South Fork, and then we have like 15 other Dallas cast members that come out, and we're there for a weekend. We have p people from all over the world come and spend the weekend with us in Dallas. We're doing it again next year in February at South Fork Ranch, where we film the show, and it's wonderful. A couple of years ago, Patrick Duffy, Linda Gray, and I did German Comic Con. There were like 50,000 people there. There are people that were my age that are discovering the show now. It's on Amazon, and I know this sounds crazy, 2 nights ago, because I have not seen every episode of Dallas, and I haven't seen any of it in years. I mean, years and years and years. I just started watching it two days ago. I'm up to episode I did like two episodes, and I did two episodes last night. Oh my gosh, it's good. I'm like, holy jolly, this is like, I understand. The acting was so good. It was good. I'm like, I really understand why the show caught on and is still finding new viewers or repeat people that are coming back to it again.
Now, what season do you think it really hit its most popular part? Because you're on the ride, you're on this train, as you said, and you're looking back now, you're saying it's great acting. It's on. It's getting renewed. It's doing something right. But at what season do you think it really, when you went, oh my gosh, this is a phenomenon?
Well, maybe right before the Who Shot JR. And Patrick Duffy said something to me recently. He said, because when they rolled out Dallas, they rolled it out worldwide simultaneously. So it wasn't going into a different market here, a different market there. It kind of went across the globe at the same time and literally became a global phenomenon. So I took a trip with my church to Israel, and just to go with my church, not a publicity thing. My hair was in a cap, and I had, a jacket on and stuff. And we're going, and there's Bedouin women with a TV antenna walking camels, and they're going, "Lucy, Lucy." And I'm like, oh my God. I mean, literally, it was in South Africa. I was the Revlon Disco Bright makeup girl, for Revlon, and did a personal appearance there and at a shopping mall. And so many people showed up, and they didn't have enough security. And top of the part of the top level of the shopping center class. I mean, it was crazy back then. It was like crazy.
You know, I always think, you know, because it was so huge, and you always wonder what would have been going on if they had social media back then. Because the only stuff you see is the Enquirer, but you know, social media now, I mean, if you must think about it, all these people would show up, and it's not like you could go on the internet, hey, oh my God, we saw Charlene Tilton. She's eating at whatever, Musso and Frank's. Oh, let's go to, you know, we love her. We're going to go see her. Back now, they can do that. But do you ever think what it would have been like if there was social media at the time? And I think that would be terrifying because you would have your popularity, which was huge, would have probably tripled at least in size.
Well, back then it was paparazzi. We were just followed by paparazzi everywhere, driving, and that was a whole different ball of wax. Like driving in the street, and it wasn't even safe, and they were climbing. I had a house with a big wall and security gates, and they were climbing in the trees, and it was different back then. Now with social media, these people are savvy. These young and back then they could print whatever they wanted, about you. And now these people, especially these young actors and performers in the business, they're smart. They control the narrative. They control their own narrative. They put out what they want to do. They know how to do it. They know how to reach the millions of people. They're smart. I'm not so social media savvy. I need to be, but it's different now, for sure.
Well, when you said, you know, you were the paparazzi and just, you know, going out in public, I'm sure you were mobbed. It's got to be so overwhelming. How does someone learn to deal with that? Because the fame you had was, I mean, that's like Beatles stuff. I mean, you know, it's huge. And it's fun. I mean, how does it change your day-to-day living? Does it, do you have to be more, you know, careful? I mean, you know, you have to sit there and give yourself extra time in case you get mobbed. I
Of
mean, how did
course.
you do that?
Of course. And I had to have sometimes had to have people travel with me, or things like that. And after my daughter was born, that was a whole other, kettle of fish, because it was overwhelming to a little girl, and to scare, when she was younger. It was a little off, it's scary. So Yeah, but
So, the JR, Who Shot JR episode. Why do you think everyone was so fascinated by that? I mean, what do you think that was behind it? Because it was like the cliffhanger of, I mean, everyone was like, oh my God,
the
who shot
ultimate
JR?
cliffhanger ever. The ultimate
So
cliffhanger
what,
ever.
why do you think people became so fascinated about it? Because they were just in love with the characters, the whole story, and why, what do you think made it that where it just caught fire?
Because J.R. Ewing is one of the all-time great television characters of all time. And Larry Hagman is one of the greatest actors of all time. And he, there's nothing to say. He was brilliant. The character of J.R. was brilliant. The show, like I said, I just started watching it and I'm like, I understand. It was good. And people were invested in every character. Everyone loved JR. They loved Bobby, the brother, who was Mr. Do Right, and then, and the wives, Pam and Sue Ellen, and me, the saucy niece who was always getting into trouble, and the ranch foreman, Ray Krebs, and that and Cliff Barnes, the business nemesis, and of course Jim Davis, who played Jock Ewing, the granddaddy, and Barbara Bel Geddes, the matriarch. Those characters were amazing. And that cliffhanger back then. Now, with social media, could you keep that a secret now?
I was thinking about that earlier today. There's always someone, because you know what it is, and I really can't stand this. People just like to ruin stuff. Like when I was living in LA, I would sit there, and if I watched, let's say, Breaking Bad or whatever show, I couldn't go on Facebook because my friends back east would ruin it. They go, "Hey, I can't believe he died." And some people, they get satisfaction out of that. And I think, but yeah, back then, I don't think you could do it because someone would find out. There'll be some person who sits there and goes, "Well, I got wronged on the set, so I'm going to give a little leak." I mean, I think that would happen.
Yes. Well, what they did is we did shoot several versions of people shooting JR. So when our director, Irving, I had finished a scene, he said, "Hey, come here." And he said, "Here, hold this gun." And I said, "Huh?" And he said, he goes, "You're not in the next scene. Just hold this gun. Here, bring the camera over here." And I said, "What am I supposed to do?" He goes, "Just point the gun over to the side, right directly in camera, and go, take that, that, and that, you schmuck." And I went, I said, "Well, obviously, because Lucy never used the word schmuck." So I'm like, yeah, I didn't do
Now,
it.
how many people? I guess I'm guessing after that cliffhanger, whenever you went out, people must have come up to you and go, "Hey, who shot you?" Hey, I mean, how annoying did that get?
Everyone wanted to know. It was, and that's why, like 190 million people tuned in worldwide, something crazy like that, to find out.
So during your time on Dallas, I know there was a lot of, back then there was a lot of other TV shows you could do. Like, what are some of them? Didn't you do like Battle of the Network Stars? Did you do a lot of stuff? Because tell me about that. Because I think Gregory Harrison told me, I think he met his wife on Battle of the Network Stars.
Randy Oaks was always great. She was a wonderful athlete on there, and Gregory was as well. Yeah.
And then there's all the game shows. What are some of the game shows you were doing?
I loved the game shows. I'm a vicious competitor. I talked Larry Hagman and the Dallas cast to do Family Feud. Oh my gosh, you should see me. Oh my gosh, it's embarrassing. I'm like, hur, hur, hur. They're like, okay, I knew all the answers. Yeah, Battle of the Network Stars was great. That was always a lot of fun. And the only thing I was good at Battle of the Network Stars was the throwing the baseball and hitting the dunk tank. Like I said, because I'm not athletic. The one thing I found out I could do, oddly enough, I was great at kayaking. I guess because I'm so petite, I just folded over and just rowed. And Howard Cosell says, "Oh my God, look at there goes little Charlene Tilton overtaking Heather Locklear in lane two."
Now, Also, back then, you would print magazine covers, and there was posters. So how does the post? I always wonder, the poster, how does it come about? Like, does your agent call and say, "Hey, we got your poster"? Because us, we would go to like Spencer Gifts or whatever
Yes,
store, and
they're
you'd
all
go in
on
the back,
Spencer. Yeah.
and there had the poster, and there would be a bunch of them, and there'd be cars, and then there'd be a sports figure, then there'd be women, and then you'd go back to them. Oh, I want to get that. So tell me about how the posters came about, and were you happy how they turned out?
Well, here's the crazy thing. Nowadays, literally, the posters I had, one was, it's me in a black bikini bottom with my hair just covering my breasts, my long hair. That was taken right outside my front door. Just no makeup, no nothing, nothing there. And no great lighting or anything put into it. And another one was at the beach. Again, somebody just snapping a picture. Nowadays, oh, they would have a makeup artist and things like that. So I'm like, and I never saw a penny. I never saw a penny of them. I don't know how my manager did that. He we found out later he was a bit of a scoundrel, and but I never saw a penny from those posters. But they were, I had two or three number one selling posters, but they were just taken quickly, and I didn't know what I was getting into with it. I
Yeah,
never.
it's just crazy when you think about it. You own a poster. I mean, must be one of the coolest things when you sit there and go, "Oh, people go, yeah, I was on TV show, but I was on post, I was on a button."
People tell me, yeah, people tell me that they had the poster, so.
Okay, so Dallas, you're on Dallas, and then when you left, they did not renew your contract. What happened there?
Yeah, after our contracts were up year seven, and they did not renew my contract, and they said, look, just publicized that you wanted to leave because you wanted to pursue a film career and this and that, and just say that it was your choice to left it to leave. And I said, nope. I said, I'm fine with the truth. I mean, I'm not getting fired because I was a professional, was getting, more fan mail than on the show. And I said, no. So but it was, you know what? It was a blessing because I had had my daughter Cherish, and I was at that point now a single mother raising my little baby. And it really was, in hindsight, it was good. It was good. I was shocked and dismayed at the time, but my focus was on my little baby, so.
So then, how did you end up coming back on the show? What happened with that?
They had asked me to come back, and I was doing a play at the La Mirada Civic Auditorium, and I wasn't able to come back. And they said, well, just get out of the play. I said, no, it's a con I'm on a contract and I want to do this play. So then they said to come back again. And when I came back, I went up to our producer Leonard Katzman's office, and his assistant Luella was there. And she said, it's so great to see you. We have missed you. And I said, it's great to be back. She goes, well, they had to bring you back. And I go, well, thank you. She goes, no. They had to bring you back. I go, a lot of fan mail. She said, no, petitions. She goes, they could not ignore it. She goes, there were so many petitions, so many signatures. I went, really? Wow. So that it meant a lot. They really didn't do it much with my character. And I understand because my character in the beginning served a purpose, this little young wayward kid causing all this trouble. But then as I grew up and matured, they weren't sure what do I we and they married her off, and that was kind of they weren't sure what to do with the character of Lucy. So
So, after the show, when you're done with it, what do you want to do? Because I'm sure you're on a network show. You had money, okay? So it's like that's one thing. When an actor is on a hit show, it's you can now you can make your choices. You can sit there and I know you did. You want to do stage? What did you want to do? I mean, you were being a good mom. Your daughter's getting older. When you leave the show, one, what are you doing? Two, were you afraid you might be typecast because everyone knew your character?
Well, my focus was my mom at that point was very ill. And so I actually spent a lot of years and my money taking care of my mother and getting her the care she needed. She was very, she had a lot of problems, not at this point physically as well. So I had to take care of her. She had cancer and pacemaker and a stroke and different things. And so I had to take care of her. And I was raising my daughter. And I did do theater. I did The Foreigner in San Francisco, directed by Jerry Zaks, 9-time Tony winner Jerry Zaks. And that was with Renee Auberjonois and Imogene Coca. And then I did what else? I did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in London. I played the part of Honey. And that was amazing. We did the full 3 hours and 45 minutes. We did the uncut version. And that was in London. And that was amazing. And I did more theater than anything. I just was doing theater. And I wasn't really afraid of being typecast. I was so young. Something in me, even when I was taking those pictures in, in little bathing suits and this and that on the cover of the, Inside Sports and this stuff, I said, I want to be Ruth Gordon. I want to be Helen Hayes. I always saw myself at the age I am now. I'm 67, and I'm like, I'm getting to play wonderful character parts now. I always saw that. And I'm having a blast doing that now. So, yeah.
So how do you think the industry's changed? I know and people say the industry's changed a lot. Some people say we got to do a taped audition because it seems like they make almost everybody audition these days. Actors I talk to,
Oh,
even they've been on a TV show forever and they used to just get the role, they give you a part. What is it like for you? Are you a fan of auditioning in were you a fan of auditioning in person? Or the self-tape, or you don't really care. Because I know a lot of people who have been around, they were so used to making that connection in the room and maybe switching up now. But now it's like, okay, tape it and send it in. What is your view on that? What's going on with that?
With the tape, you probably have 5 seconds to catch, to make them stop in their tracks because they've got so many submissions, they literally cannot watch all the tapes. So I don't know if it's like on a dating site, you swipe right or left or whatever you do on a dating site, but you go boom, and then you've got 3 seconds to, I think, catch them. Or else they're on to the next. You'd have to talk to a casting person more on that. I'm fortunate. The work I've done, a lot of it has been offered, or I've been working with people to create it. I audition a lot, and I got to tell you, those come very few and far between. So, I do not know the trick to self-tape auditioning, I gotta tell you.
It must be hard. I mean, it's something that I don't know. It seems like it's extra work. Like before, when you're in LA, you have to deal with the traffic, get out your Thomas guy, drive to an audition.
Yeah, the Thomas guy.
But now, and then that was it. But now it's like, you hear these people think, well, I have to set this up. I got to get the right lighting. And you hear it, and it's like, you guys, you're actors. You shouldn't have to deal with that. You should just be able to sit there, walk into a room if you have to an audition and say, here's what I got. Like how you said, when you found out about you did the work with when you got the role as Lucy because you took the script, you went with your acting teacher. That should be enough. You shouldn't have had to sit. If that happened now, you'd have to sit there and do all that. Then you'd have to go into a room and tape yourself. And it's
No, I
crazy.
mean most people, it's not you sit up your little lights or whatever and you do it. You get someone to read with you. It's not that big a deal. What I have problem with is then you got to download it to WeTransfer, and that's the stuff I don't know how to do. But you can always I go to somebody that'll tape the audition or whatever. But I don't have a problem with auditioning. I think that if they're buying the goods, they better see what they're getting. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem with auditioning at all. And there's no use complaining about it because that's it. I just want to know from casting people. Like, I did a movie with Nicolas Cage called Vengeance a couple of years ago, and it was a self-tape. And I asked the director, I said, why did you cast me in the, he goes, because you're good. And I go, no, but I mean, how did, so you watched the tape? He goes, yeah. And I played the mother of a meth addict, and the part was crazy. I was an ex-meth addict, and my sons were meth addicts, and I had a Nazi flag flying over my porch. It was a crazy story, a crazy character. So the director said, yeah, I'm watching your tape. And he said, it was really good. He said, Nick, come here, watch this tape. And Nick says, she's really good. And he says, Nick, do you know who that is? He said, she's really familiar. But no, he goes, that's Charlene Tilton. He goes, no way. Anyway, I ended up getting the part. But again, I had to say, I said, so you watched it? He said, yeah. I said, because it was like three or four scenes that I had to do. I said, you watched it all? He said, yeah. So I don't know how much they watched the auditions, you know? They don't have time to watch them all. I'm sure they don't.
Now, you've been in the business. How do you think it's changed for women? Everything, it used to be hard for female roles, and it was harder for, an older gentleman could have tons of roles, and hey, we'll just put you with a younger wife, and it all works that way. But how do you think it is, as you, someone who's been working most of her life, do you think it's harder for women now, or is it easier? And are you excited about some of the roles that you can get?
I love the roles I've been getting there. Like in a Lifetime movie, it was a really fun, really sweet movie. I got to play the crazy aunt making moonshine in the bathtub, you know, as watching her niece get married, find the love of her life, and get married. And then I just did this one that's on Amazon, Final Recovery. Now that was a very different character. It's a thriller, a horror thriller, which I've never done. And I play a very sweet grandmotherly type that runs a drug rehabilitation center. And I'm trying to help all the patients. And then little one by one, you see the patients start disappearing. And what's happening to the patients is they start leaving the center that I'm providing. Well, turns out I'm not so sweet and grandmotherly as you may think. I may or might not be a serial killer, but so again, that's like a wonderful, and the reviews on that were amazing. It's on Amazon. It was just a low budget fun thing to do, but it was great. I don't know. I've gotten to do, I've got a couple of really fun things coming up. So yeah, the parts are good.
Well, I saw the review you posted on Facebook. They had some really good words for you. I mean, it was like they were comparing you to these legendary characters. I mean, how does it still feel great to get a review? I mean, you've gotten so many reviews in your life, and I'm sure the bad ones always sting the most. But is it still feel great when you look at it and you're like, I still got it, man. This is awesome. Maybe it must put you over the moon.
Well, it does, especially all the wonderful reviews for Final Recovery, because, like I said, it was a low budget movie. And again, I saw the character, and she's supposed to be this nefarious. She's killing all these people. My daughter was in the movie too. She played one of the characters, one of the patients, and I killed her in the movie. She also did the music for the movie. But anyway, so I wanted to make my character Nanny Lou as sweet and lovable. So I bought like little girl barrettes to wear in my hair, because there's something that happened when she was a traumatic experience, and she was stuck there somewhere. And it wasn't a Christmas movie, but it took place during at Christmas. So I got all these sweet little Christmas sweaters, and I had my little Christmas cup that said joy, and I'm supposed to be crocheting, so I was crocheting a Christmas tree and a Santa Claus. I brought all my own props. I brought all my own wardrobe. I brought everything to the set. So all that to say, when I get a good review, I'm like, thank you, because I put a lot of thought and work into that character to make it, to make her, full.
Now, you live in Nashville. How do you find an acting teacher in Nashville? I mean, it's like because you're known actor. It must was it did you have to audit classes? I mean, I think that's awesome that you're still you keep your working the muscle, the acting muscle. But how did you find your acting teacher?
He was recommended to me. Oh, and I don't even remember by who. So, like, when I had a couple of auditions to tape, and he would tape them with me, and he would coach me before, and then and he had classes, and I said, "Gosh, I want to get into a class. Just you gotta keep that muscle going." So, anyway, I'm in the class, and I love it. Just love it.
Now you in 2012 and 14 you end up back on Dallas. What was your role on that? On the was it the reboot?
Oh, the reboot. Yeah. Not much. I came in, I did a few episodes. I was doing a television show in London. I was doing Skating on Ice. It's like Dancing with the Stars, only skating on ice. Or Dancing on Ice, it's called Dancing on Ice. And so I did not have a lot to do on the reboot. And so I don't really know much about the reboot.
So during the time at Dallas, who were some of the celebrities you would meet? Because people must have wanted to meet you because you're on a hit show. I mean, you're sort of like the rock star personics. People loved your character, you know, they were intrigued. Who were some celebrities that you met that you never thought you would ever have met?
So many, so many. Elton John. My all-time favorite. My PR agent way back in the day reminded me a couple weeks ago. He said, when you hosted Saturday Night Live, he said that I was there, and then he goes, and we were somewhere that Muhammad Ali, and he goes, and Muhammad Ali was leaving, and he rushed over to come and get your autograph. And I remember that. I'm like, what? And I'm like, no. And he goes, no, I really want your autograph. I'm like, no, you're the greatest. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah. I mean, just, and here's the thing. I am such a fan. Like, I have met Julie Andrews on several occasions. And I say the same thing to her every single time. Oh, hello, Charlene. How are you? And I go, hello. That's all I do. She's, are you all right, darling? And I can't get a word out. I just start crying when I've met Julie Andrews, and it's so stupid. But
No, I mean, it's something that it's someone who means something to you. Now, are
remember,
you?
my first movie I ever saw was Mary Poppins. The second movie I ever saw was Sound of Music. Don't you think I, in my little kid brain, I knew I was switched at birth. I knew Julie Andrews had to be my real mother. Here she was, she could sing while cleaning up your room. She could make you the Sound of Music. She could make your clothes out of the curtains. She must,
So do you still do stage? Are you still doing stage? Is it something that you'll go? Because I know a lot of actors do stage, and because you have a name, people come to see you. Is there any stage? When's the last time you did some stage performances?
I did a one-woman show called Tammy Faye Tweets in Los Angeles. I just did it for 3 nights. My partner, Tony Jarrus, and I wrote it. It was a one-woman show, 90 minutes. And it was really, really great. Great reviews. And so that was fabulous. Was that the last time? I don't know, but I'd love to get on stage again.
So I always end up with this question, and I want two answers from you. I always ask, and you can do personal and professional. I always ask people, looking back at your life, what are you proud of? What makes you proud?
I guess taking care of my mom and my daughter and being with my grandkids. So,
How
career
about
is
prof how
huh?
about prof how about professionally?
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in London? That was a big one for me. And I remember the producers would say, I'm watching Charlene. He said to my husband, said, I see Charlene and she looks like this mousy little girl, this thing, little mousy character on stage. She comes out, she's a sexy, hot, da, da, da. He goes, how does she do that? And he says, it's so, and just doing that for 3 hours and 45 minutes. And then I did Snow White in Los Angeles. It's Panto with, I was the Wicked Queen. Ariana Grande was Snow White. Neil Patrick Harris was the Mirror. We did 8 shows a week. That was a lot. That was great. And yeah, I just love doing stage.
See, that's good, and that's it. But so funny because you didn't mention Dallas when I said what you're proud of. So I mean, you love Dallas, but it shows that you do love the stage, and it's just so funny because a lot of people would say, "Well, I was on a hit show for all these years," but it's just great that you have that. You can tell you love the craft, and you still love it, and that's so important because sometimes people get burnt out, and you seem like I mean, I think your career, you're more happy, I think, more happier now doing what you do than when you were in Dallas. Is that true?
Yes, I was so young and it was so busy because when we weren't filming, because it was worldwide, there was something 24/7. There were shows all over the world that wanted you. There was newspapers and magazines that wanted you all. It was such a busy time that I didn't know which end was up. And I can look back now and go, wow, it was too much of a whirlwind. It was hard to be real present at that time. So, yeah, I'm much more settled now for sure.
Well, that's awesome, and you seem very happy, and you have a good energy to you, and I appreciate that. And the people you act with must appreciate that. So you have Final Recovery's on Amazon right now,
Yes.
and then you had Heartlands was the movie that was on
Yes, it's on
Lifetime.
Lifetime. It's called Where the Heart Lands. It's on Lifetime. Oh, that's a wonderful, wonderful movie. And I play that was fun to film because we filmed it during the Kentucky Derby, not this year, but the last year. And I got to be around all those amazing horses. And so when I was not working, I was always just off by myself spending time with the horses. They were just magnificent, magical, magical creatures. Oh, beautiful.
Well, that's good. And I know besides that, you said you have a bunch of projects coming up. You're still working. What would be what role, if someone came up to you and said, Charlene, here's a role for you. It can be whatever you want. What do you think that role would be?
I don't know. I just like working. Possibility of a wonderful thriller, not horror, but a thriller, for Netflix, and then another very sweet movie for Hallmark. So I've got a couple of wonderful things coming up.
Well, that's awesome. People, go back and watch Dallas. Charlene's watching it and she was in it. That's so cool.
Yes, I know. I should start a watch party with everybody because
You should.
I have not seen every episode,
Well,
and I'm really enjoying watching it because I'm like, oh wow, it's good. It's so good.
that's awesome, Charlene. Thank you for doing the show. People, as I said, go follow Charlene on social media. Look at her IMDb. Go watch her past products. You can go to my website, coopertalk.net. You can find 1,071 episodes there. You can email me at cooper@coopertalk.net. Remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guest. And don't forget, drink your water, eat your vegetables, take your vitamins, and I'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely.